Hello, it's Christine, and welcome to Making More with Less, Optimizing Milk Production Through Techniques Instead of Tools. This presentation I've given a few times, and one thing that I want to let you know before we start is that the first half or so is really about why we should be focusing on using techniques before tools. And the second part is more the clinical part of using tools, how to use techniques, and really kind of how to decide how to put it together and what types of techniques can be used in place of tools in many cases. And we'll really get into why, what is really happening, what we see on the landscape right now. What people are doing, what parents are doing, what they're learning and hearing, and just kind of get started thinking about how we can see ourselves and our role in lactation support, perhaps a little differently or just in a little bit more clarity than we've seen before. So I truly believe that lactation care providers are building positive change in the world through counseling and education. We're helping to get people to feel empowered through giving them evidence-based information that is also relevant to their specific situation. It's one thing to say this is what the evidence says, but of course, we have to relate it to what's actually happening to them. So we work to help clients find a better understanding of how the processes of lactation and infant feeding work so they can best meet their own goals. And as IBCLCs, we bring specific technical skills and techniques to address complex and simple lactation situations, including lactation following preterm birth. Now, what we do know, and I think that everyone will agree, is that parents who are giving birth, parents who are lactating today are using a lot of things. And the reason they're using them is because they're being targeted with marketing for all of these products. And the marketing specifically tells them that there will be a problem. And if they should need something, this is the product for them. So you can very easily see why people want to be prepared when all of the messages they receive culturally typically say that breastfeeding is going to be hard. And there's a lot of things that you might need to go along with it. And so companies are right there to make sure that those products are ready for them, which in many cases is a good thing. We want to make sure that that is kept to the point where it's a good thing and it's not something that's interfering with people's lactation experiences. So there's a growing need for us as lactation care providers to consider ethics in relation to lactation-related products and the promotion of breastfeeding and human milk feeding. So what I've intended here with this presentation is to encourage individual lactation care providers to thoughtfully consider their own responsibilities with an open mind and a willingness to engage and communicate with others about their ideas and decisions. Ethical and effective practice is a process which requires constant nurturing. I humbly walk this path with you as a skilled lactation care provider. I do not do everything perfectly every time. We're doing this together. We're all learning. We're working to get better and we're working to learn from the experiences that we're having every day. We don't need to wait to collect our experiences and change later. We really need to be adapting constantly to the work that we're doing based on what we're experiencing. So when we think about the ethics of products and devices, we want to consider the relationship between ethics and devices. What is our responsibility versus what is maybe something that's going to sit outside of our responsibility. And part of that comes from biases we may have, good and bad, our knowledge, individual experience with using devices, either personally or with our clients, and what we know about inequities in clients' access to devices is also an important part of considering the ethics of products and devices. And the difference between public teaching and direct care or counseling of an individual. And you hear me emphasize this a lot because it's a really important thing to consider every time we open our mouth. Who are we talking to? What are we saying? And how do we say it differently when we're talking to a group, or we're talking to a large number of people, or we're talking to one person whose situation we have assessed with our professional expertise, and about whose situation we plan to document this interaction. Those are two really vastly different things, and we have different responsibilities around them, and we have different abilities to communicate in different ways. And I think that the easiest way for me to think about this is really considering, are we as lactation care providers product specialists or process specialists? And I think that years back, perhaps when I started, maybe, 5 to 10 years after that, I would have said, we really are supposed to be process specialists. We really are supposed to be primarily specialists in the process of human lactation. But I think that where we are now, with how many products are out there and how many people are using them, we have to strike a balance between being product specialists and process specialists. But then we have to get even deeper than that and think of it this way. If we are going to be product specialists, we need to specialize in understanding how products work and how they impact the lactation process, not just learning every single kind or brand or whatever. It really has to be granular enough to understand why a certain shape of nipple, for instance, would work for a certain baby, or why a type of nipple shield would be useful in some situation. We have to be able to explain those things and not just see it on a very surface level, like this is the best one, or this is the one that everyone should use, or this is, generally how this works. We really have to be very specialized in how products are intended to impact lactation situations, as well as how they can unintentionally impact and interfere with things. We have to be able to balance those and to objectively look at the potential positive outcomes and the potential negative outcomes. We have to really look at all of those things. And that's what we're going to get into here. We know, we understand, and we've known for a really long time what really drives milk production. And that message tends to get confused in all of the marketing that gets put out to parents, makes it seem like it's a big mystery when we know that it's not. It's really about how frequently milk is being removed. And there's not a whole lot outside of that, that isn't a medical condition that's affecting it. It really is driven primarily by that. And we know that it's, a lot of the routines and things that are happening around lactation that tend to get in the way. And so we really have the fundamental knowledge that we need to keep things going. So if you skipped the, ahead to the next part of this presentation, and we just talk about the techniques, that really is going to be kind of basic and fundamental to all the knowledge that we have. It's really going to start there, but we do need to take some time to think about these potential outcomes that we see with products and tools. The reason why we as lactation care providers have so much opportunity to impact so many people is because we really understand the process of human lactation in a way that helps us to provide guidance so that people can manage it appropriately and keep it working. What we do by providing this information and counseling is to help parents break out of that cycle of assuming that their milk production is somehow wrong, that there's something wrong with it, it's not working. And we have the counseling skills to be sure that we are always supporting the effort and dedication that people are putting into their lactation journey by purchasing, learning how to use, asking questions about products and devices. We want to validate that for them. They're doing a good thing by trying to do more. But we do want to make sure our focus is always on those most important elements of milk production, especially when we're working with somebody who is pump or milk expression dependent. We want them especially to be really, really clear on the basics of how milk production works so that they can use their tools to the best of their abilities. It's not going to be as efficient if they really don't understand the process and they're only focused on the product. So the responsibilities we hold, we are here to provide evidence-based information to our clients regarding the use of techniques, appliances, and devices. So this means we need to avoid bias or the appearance of bias. We need to use the evidence that's out there when it is there. We need to be responsible to know and be able to interpret new research and findings about products and strategies, really understand how, not only how they work, but the different ways that people use them and the different outcomes that we can see when people use them in certain ways. We also have the responsibility to, and I quote here from the EBLC scope of practice, evaluate, critique, and demonstrate the use of techniques and devices which support breastfeeding. Be aware that some devices may be marketed without evidence to support their usefulness and may be harmful to breastfeeding. So right there in the scope of practice, it reminds us that not all products are actually going to be helpful. Some may even be harmful. We are responsible as providers to evaluate and discern the marketing that we hear and read and see from the actual evidence that there is, as well as the physiological plausibility of what a company is saying that its product can do. We also have the responsibility to critique and evaluate the use of techniques, appliances, and devices which support or may be harmful to initiation and or continuation of breastfeeding. So in this case, we need to use our professional judgment, the concept of physiological plausibility, and the avoidance of bias or conflict of interest to critique and evaluate products and strategies. And we need to be aware and always on the lookout for those times and places where companies are looking to buy our influence, whether that's through providing us samples of products for free or at a low cost, or say partnering with us to create or do social media events or, you know, appearances to give us things that we can give away as a benefit or a marketing method for our practices. And if you think about these things, the ways that companies are using their connections to healthcare providers, it's exactly the same thing as formula companies have been doing all along inside hospitals, in doctors' offices, the exact same marketing techniques. They want us to use and know and like their products so that we will recommend them and so that parents will assume that we endorse them. So not only do we need to not endorse certain products, we need to avoid the appearance of endorsement. And that can be really tricky because some of those things that these companies are doing are very tempting because you can really get a lot of eyes on you. You can get a lot of engagement on social media if you're partnered with a company or if you're giving away something with a brand name that your potential clients and people in your community might want. It's really difficult. But what we need to keep in mind as providers is that what's happening to a person who has just given birth, when they use a device or a tool that is designed to assist them on their lactation journey, using that tool, learning how to use it, using it, deciding if it's working, making adjustments, finding out more information about the product, making buying decisions about it, including where they're going to get it, how much they're willing to pay for it, who's going to get it for them. All of this kind of thinking completely causes them to completely override what their brain is actually physiologically primed to be doing at that time. So instead of staying in the mode of nourish, nurture, recover, their brain has to do things like listen, learn, think, analyze, plan, make buying decisions. So you can see how this is a difficult thing for that brain to be doing, and you don't get this time back. The time that is at the beginning of the baby's life, that time doesn't come back. You don't get back into that mode. That mode is there for a reason. And when we have to override it, of course, there's going to be situations where we do. For instance, preterm baby who's in the NICU, that's a person where they have to use a breast pump. What else are we going to do? They have to be taught how to hand express. And that means they need to have containers to put their milk in. So there's things they're going to have to learn and figure out and procure and They need to know how to store their milk and how to transport it. And we all see how challenging that can be for people. So we want to help as many people as possible avoid that difficulty, avoid that challenge by maintaining the simplest, easiest, least, product interfering ways that we possibly can. And that goes for everybody, regardless of their feeding choice and whether they're expressing milk partially or exclusively or feeding from their body. Really, all of those situations, there's a way to simplify that process, make it as easy as possible for people using the least amount of tools. There is a way to do that if we're always staying focused on that for them and understanding why we need to do that for them. So it's within our clinical competency guidelines that we have the duty to protect, promote, and support breastfeeding as IBCLCs, which means that we need to make sure that people we're working with have been provided all of the information that they need to either choose to and continue to feed their baby from their body or choose not to do so. We don't want to ever make an assumption that the way a person is currently doing their feeding and their lactation is the way that they plan to continue. We always find out their plans, we find out their goals, and we help them get there. Sometimes people don't even know what they want, so we really have to work hard to help them lay out a plan. And we want to make sure we never skip that step. We want to make sure we never skip the part where we teach and encourage people in a way that reminds them that just because they stopped trying to latch their baby a few weeks ago, that doesn't mean they can't do it anymore, right? So all those things that we want to just make sure that we haven't skipped anything and that we are helping people understand that they can, a lot of decisions that they make aren't permanent. They can go back to doing things a different way. Even if it didn't work out before, we can help them learn how to try again with new information and new supports. And what that does is it allows some people to resume breastfeeding when they had stopped. It allows some people to feel better about their decision not to do it anymore. Because sometimes people may say, okay, well, what would that entail? And so we sit and we talk about, here's what we would do and here's how you would try. And, this is what it would take. And this is the amount of effort and these are the tasks. And they might say, oh, wow, that's not something that I can do right now, but what else can I do? And then we can make another plan, helps them feel better in, in more control over what they're doing going forward, rather than just feeling like they are on a path and they have to stay on it. They can know that there are choices and they can own the choices that they make because we've given them more information. So how we support, protect, and promote breastfeeding is by providing evidence-based lactation education to families, health professionals, educators, and the community. We advocate for breastfeeding in all settings and promote breastfeeding as the child feeding norm. We support practices which promote breastfeeding, and we discourage practices which interfere with breastfeeding. And so where that ties in where we are right now is really talking about this proliferation of products, tools, and devices, and keeping in mind that the simplest way to accomplish human lactation for most people is going to be avoiding using a bunch of products. It's going to be feeding the baby in the simplest way possible for them. Regardless of how complicated things might get, there's always a way to simplify things to make this more sustainable for the parent. We want to keep it simple because that is logical and it's ethical. Using fewer tools and devices means a simpler process and a simpler routine for breastfeeding and or milk expression. It means fewer tasks. It means that the parent and family have to expend fewer external resources. And we also want to keep in mind this complicated factor here. Mothers and parents express really complex emotions around products and things. So even when they love the outcomes of using the thing, they can still hate that they needed to use the thing. They can still blame themselves or feel that their body failed them in some way because they had to use, for instance, a galactagogue or a breast pump or a nipple shield. they can feel that a breast pump saved their milk production or saved their ability to breastfeed their baby who was born preterm, but still hate the actual pump and want to run it over with their car. Everybody has a story of somebody who tells them something outlandish that they want to do to their breast pump. It's pretty common that people say things like that. And so it's just important to remember that they end up with these complex relationships with the things. And we hear that sometimes when they have their next baby and they tell us how they feel or how they felt about it and whether they want to do those same things again, whether they're trying to avoid doing those same things again. So it's very, you know, it can be conflicting to think about that. It's something that we can see and we can understand easily, but that might not make as much sense to people who are not involved in it and to their family members and people who are around them. They may just say, well, last time, you know, you used a pump, why don't you do that? And it may be confusing to the people around them why they're choosing not to do that this time. But we can help them by normalizing that feeling too, and letting them know that they're not alone. They're not the only one that feels that way, you know, mixed feelings about the things that they're using. And when I talk about this, I always like to throw this in here. There's always going to be somebody who comes back and says, look, I work with people who use all kinds of things and I have to talk about using them and I have to teach people. And that's just the reality of today's world. I get it. I totally understand that. And you should be talking about using things. So in public messaging situations, we should be talking about the things and all the stuff that comes along with modern breastfeeding. We should be talking about them in public to groups of people, for instance, on social media or in classes, in general, describing their function, what they do, what they're used for, using generalities and avoiding brand names. We always want to eliminate the appearance of a conflict of interest so that what the result is that we have educated people on products, but we've not endorsed specific products for them. So that's a really big piece of this. That's the piece of talking to a group versus talking to a person. And we've all heard that adage that when you're talking to one person that you are counseling, educating, providing clinical lactation care, you're evaluating and assessing their situation. You are going to document your interaction with them afterward. If what you assess and evaluate is that a certain product, a brand, a specific type of product would be ideal for them to use, the optimal choice, that's, you can definitely talk about that with them, explain that, and also explain if there are also other options that they could choose, especially if you happen to sell or rent or provide the type of product that you're recommending, so that they understand they could get it somewhere else if they need to. But why specifically you're telling them that they need this thing? You don't just tell everybody that they need that brand name. You're telling them that they need it because it has this specific feature that will meet their specific need. That's always appropriate. You're documenting that. That's part of what you do as a clinical lactation care provider. And if you're listening to this and that's not in your scope, that's where you're going. That, you know, that's how this works. So that's an important thing to be discerning now at this point, and understanding that if, you know, that is not within your scope, then that would be a great place to be referring to an IBCLC so that people can get that level of care that they need at that point. So let's think about these risks of appearing as if we are the ones marketing tools and feeding devices. What happens is when parents are receiving all of these messages through culture, through healthcare providers, through their family and friends, through mainstream media, through social media messages that they receive constantly, what can result is the unintended or unwanted use of products like breast pumps, nipple shields, ointments, or other treatments for nipple trauma and pain, feeding bottles or cups, supplemental nursing devices or tubes. They can result in unintended or unwanted need for expressing milk, for storing, thawing, and feeding expressed milk. that may result in a lack of resources to obtain or purchase the tools and feeding devices or continue their use. And then it gets even more clinical because we now have the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine protocol covering the management of hyperlactation, which specifically cites iatrogenic causes of hyperlactation, such as a healthcare provider recommending routine milk expression after breastfeeding or routine use of galactagogues. So that's an example of a healthcare provider recommending routine use of products, tools, or devices that is interfering and causing a lactation problem. So of course, that protocol recommends that lactation care always be individualized, not generalized, which keeps babies and their parents much safer. We can also see risks to the mental health of the parent. We have all probably experienced that sense that the parent is not enjoying parenthood anymore. We have seen depressive symptoms or suspected them. We have seen anxiety about people's parenting ability, or they doubt their capacity to feed their baby. They may feel that now they need to rely on others for help due to the increased workload of infant feeding and expressing milk, more tasks. They may feel that they want to wean, or they may feel pressured to wean by well-meaning people around them who see how many things they're using or how hard it is or how much stuff they have to take with them when they leave the house and tell them that wouldn't it just be easier if you stopped with all of that? They may feel as if they have failed somehow, and they may have a general, you know, difficult to explain feeling of being out of sync with their baby. When they're using products, it's less of a, or actually, so while they may still have a lot of feedback loops going on with their baby, some of those are interrupted, and sometimes there's more feedback happening with the tools and products and devices than there is with the baby. So that all of that feedback that's happening that tells their body how much milk to make may be missing, even if they are, you know, doing a combination of things that can get really complicated for their body and their baby to stay synchronized together. And people feel that they can't always explain it or express it very well, but that sense of being, you know, not in the same mode as the baby can be challenging for people to manage and can make them feel as if they're not doing a good job of being a parent. So let's think about, before we start, you know, talking about specific interventions, let's think about what an intervention really is in lactation care. So it's going to be a tool or a technique that's used voluntarily or by medical necessity to sustain or improve breastfeeding. So an intervention, either it's used to solve a problem, or it may also be used as a personal choice of the parent. They've decided that this is what they want to do. So for instance, using a breast pump could be solving a problem, like I'm separated from my baby temporarily because they're in the NICU and I plan to breastfeed when we're back together again. Or they could be using it because it's a personal choice. They don't want to put their baby to the breast and they've decided they want to use a breast pump instead. So an intervention is any tool or technique that's being used to sustain or to improve breastfeeding. So sometimes we use tools as interventions. A tool is a product, and the maker of the product wants to sell products. So the maker of the product wants people to believe that they either have, might have, or will have the problem that their tool solves. We are the people who stand in front of them and say, okay, hold on. You do have this problem. You don't have this problem. And you may or may not get this problem. So we are the ones who should be providing the education to people about whether or not they need the product so that then they can go on to make a decision. So whether their decision is, you said I don't need it, but I want to use it, that's their decision, right? But we were there to provide them that information. So they weren't just being marketed to and told, well, you might have to use this. So here it is. So lactation care actually is an intervention. Sometimes it can eliminate the need or the desire to use products. Not saying that that's our goal, but that is what our function is to actually explain to people when tools might be necessary, when they might be useful, and when they might be harmful, so that they actually can make choices about using them that are not just based on marketing. So our framework for recommending lactation devices and tools, and I really like this quote from the book Interdisciplinary Lactation Care, adopt a mindset of scarcity. That is really begin with thinking that everyone needs nothing, right? So the quote is, the appropriate and conservative use of breastfeeding devices increases healthcare providers' effectiveness in helping with breastfeeding. So only recommending tools when they're actually needed or actually being requested actually makes us more effective in helping with breastfeeding. That's that mindset of scarcity. Beginning with the assumption that breastfeeding works, most people don't need tools, and if they do need tools, they deserve a full explanation of why, what the tool is going to do for them, how to use it, and how to know when and if they can stop using it, right? And this probably reminds you of something that we always talk about when it comes to people getting bad information around early formula supplementation. When people tell new parents to give some formula after breastfeeding or give the baby formula because they have jaundice or lost weight or whatever, but they don't give any specifics, many times parents don't realize they can stop at some point. It's whenever a tool or an intervention is being used, parents deserve the explanation of all of those things we just talked about, so that they can make a decision and know when this temporary intervention can be ended. And they can make any temporary intervention into a permanent one if they want to, of course. But if we don't tell them all that information, then that's not their choice. They're just doing what they were told to do. They didn't know they could stop, right? So we don't want people to feel as if they were led down the wrong path. They need to have that information in order to make their own choice. So we can use a framework for when to recommend and how to recommend lactation devices and tools. We are here to sharpen our skill set because the responsibility lies with us to know how to help with lactation, whether or not products, devices, and tools are available or wanted by the parents. So there's always going to be situations where we need to help somebody who doesn't have access to all those things. We still need to be able to help them. And for instance, if somebody cannot get or does not want to use a breast pump, we have to be able to teach them how to hand express and maintain their milk production should something occur where they can't breastfeed their baby or they are separated from their baby. So without a breast pump, they would still be able to maintain lactation. Our foundational training provides us with these skills and techniques. Sometimes we just don't use them as often nowadays because so many of the people who come to us are already using piles of stuff. So we sometimes are leaving behind those techniques and interventions, which we learned way back when, but sometimes we don't always circle back and say, did you know you can also do this? Did you know you could try this before using that? We have the information that people need. Sometimes they don't realize there's actually another way. That's where we stand in the middle there to say, here's something else you can try. You may not need that thing that you haven't even bought yet. So, of course, the client always holds the ultimate authority to decide whether they're going to use a technique or a process or a product or a tool or a combination of those things to resolve their issue. Our role is to educate them, inform them, anticipate what might be coming next. We're not there to try to persuade them to do anything. We're there to actually provide the information that they need in their specific situation. They can't get that information from other places. That's a really big key to what it is that we do and what access to us really means. People can get information about how lactation works, how breastfeeding is managed, what to do if they have certain problems. They can look that up. Right? They can look it up online. Sure, they may get some weird answers, but they can also find the right answers. But they won't know which are the right answers for them. What they get when they have access to us and our skill set is the ability to have somebody assess their situation and help guide them to the things that will work, that are most likely to work for them. That is what access to skilled lactation care provides them. It's not a bunch of information that only we know, because the information is all out there. It's not, we don't own it. We're not gatekeeping it. What we are selling them, what they are paying for, what their insurance companies are paying for, is the skill set and expertise of a trained person to assess their situation and say, this is what you might need to do. This is what you might need to use. This is what might happen next. And all the rest of that information that you found, not relevant in your specific situation, because they're not trained to do that. They can find all the information in the world, but they can't filter it to know that it's actually appropriate for them. That's what we do. Our framework can include intentional use of language. So making sure that we ask, what do they already know about products? What have they heard? What have they already purchased? What have they already used? We want to make sure that we're allowing them to bring us the narrative of how they found out about this or what they were thinking about why they want to use it. Let them tell the story of why it's important to them, so that we can, you know, begin to find those places where they may need more information, or where we may be hearing from them, I picked this thing because that's part of my plan. So then we can start helping, you know, develop further on their explanation of what their ultimate goals are. It helps really, of course, in the work that we do to avoid I statements. I recommend, I think, all of those things, but, you know, to provide more generalized ways of saying things like some mothers find, some families choose, when we're talking about products and things like that, so that it doesn't always come across like, well, my clients like to use this, or everybody that I work with finds that this happens when they use that. We really want these things to come across to people as, when we see something or we're talking about something that happens for a lot of people, let's make that clear. When we're talking about something where there's actually evidence about things, we want to talk about that. The only time we ever really want to say I and what I think is when we're talking about our professional expertise. What I have seen when I evaluated your baby is that your baby needs an artificial nipple that does this or is this shape, because their mouth does this or their mouth is this shape. Like, when we are doing that, when we are doing those evaluations and assessments, that's where it's appropriate, because again, we're using our professional judgment and expertise and skill set. But if we're always saying things like, well, I tell mothers to do this, or I always have my clients try that, it begins to sound like it's just your plan rather than something that is you know, applicable to many people or really appropriate for them. And we want to explain what we do know about things. If we're working with a product, there's not a lot of research, say those silicone breast pumps, really not a lot of published research on those. So everything we talk about when we talk about those is going to be based on what you know from your professional peers and what you have seen with people that you're working with who are using them. Like, that's the sum total of what we know, is what each of us understand about how they work and what we've seen happen with our clients. So we wouldn't want to say, you know, well, what we know from the evidence or the research, because there really isn't a whole lot about that yet. Some products have a lot of research behind them. Some products have really hardly any. So we just want to be clear about that, especially when those things are coming with marketing that seems to claim that there's research about something. We don't want parents to get fooled by the marketing terms that make it sound like the company spent a lot of money on some science when they actually didn't. They're just saying whatever they want to say. So of course, our role, and again, what we are responsible to do, but what we're really selling to people, is our investigation skills, our evaluation skills. So we are looking at all the basics, three categories really: quality of the breastfeeding, frequency of milk removal, type of milk expression. In some cases, it may be all three of those things. In some cases, it might be two or one. We have to think about all those things when we're doing our investigations. looking at when the baby is breastfeeding, latch and suck quality, baby-led feeding times and duration, so the routine of feeding, their ability to transfer milk well, is the baby waking normally during nighttime hours, the frequency of milk removal, things like thorough milk removal is happening at least 8 times every 24 hours, it's distributed throughout the 24-hour period without long breaks, it's happening either the baby's removing milk, hand expressions removing milk, a manual or electric breast pump is removing milk. And then when we think about the type of milk expression, are we talking about effective hand expression technique? Are we talking about appropriate use of a manual breast pump appropriately to thoroughly empty the breasts? Are we talking about using an appropriate electric breast pump properly? There's so many factors that go into whether somebody is making an optimal milk supply, whether their milk production has been optimized. And we have to start there before we start thinking about adding anything else in, especially if they're already using products, as we just said, especially during the milk expression part of it. Because we don't want to add anything to a situation that might already be kind of complicated if we don't have to. So we want to call upon our asking great questions skills. And you may be familiar with these if you've seen my 5 great questions handout. So things like, when was the last time you expressed your milk? Because if we ask somebody how many times a day that they're pumping, they're going to tell you what they think that is the right answer or what they think you want to hear, not necessarily exactly what they did. And some days don't look like the day before. They might have had the worst day of all time, or they might have been the last 2 days since they knew they had an appointment with you, gotten right back on track of pumping really frequently. So you really want to get some detail into that routine. You want to know how their breasts feel after they've hand expressed or pumped or fed the baby. Are they beginning out, you know, feeling fuller and then feeling softer toward the end? What's going on with that? Is that appropriate? Because are they on day one or two and they're not necessarily going to feel those differences? We want to ask them to tell us about their nighttime routines. We want to hear a story. I don't want numbers. I don't want an app to tell me how many minutes their baby slept. I want to hear the story of the nighttime. When does everybody go to bed? When did the baby go to bed? When did the baby wake up? What happened? What did the baby do when they were awake? How did they go back to sleep? All of the things that happened during the night. How did the parent feel? Were they able to go back to sleep? There's so many factors that have to do with milk production that happen during the nighttime. So I really need to hear a long story about that. If the baby is going to the breast, how do they know when the baby is hungry or when the baby is ready to go to the breast? And how can you tell when they're done? Is the baby taking in anything other than milk? Is the baby being fed away from the breast? What kind of devices are being used to feed the baby when they don't feed at the breast? Can we figure out together how much milk they're making in 24 hours? So you're thinking about the questions we normally ask, the information we're normally getting, but learning how to get greater detail and better narrative around it can make a huge difference in helping to understand what we are trying to optimize when we talk about optimizing milk production. Remembering as well that something that parents are concerned about often, especially if they're feeling anxiety symptoms, is that they have heard somewhere, maybe many times, maybe once, but it stuck with them, that stress or anxiety about milk production is going to impact their milk production. We know that this is not necessarily true. This is not necessarily science, right? Stress may have a more significant impact on the practices and management of lactation than on the actual physiology. So we want to continue to support optimal practices and provide ongoing encouragement. And we know this is the case because people who experience major disasters and displacement from their homes and, you know, living through natural disasters or people living in refugee camps, they can continue lactation as normal despite incredible stress. There are, you know, incredible stories of people maintaining lactation when everybody just continues to encourage them and facilitate it. So their amount of stress about milk production is probably not going to be enough to impact their milk production on a grand scale. It's really not about that. It's more about what that stress and anxiety causes them to change in their routine. Does it make them feel so bad that they don't wake up as often to pump? Does it make them feel so bad that they stop feeding the baby for as long? That they, you know, change their patterns around feeding and milk expression? That's what we really want to hear if they are asking questions about stress and anxiety and how they impact milk production. Those are important themes to explore with them, not just to shut down whatever they're thinking, but really just to kind of explore why they're thinking it and what it might have shifted in their routines. So the framework starts here with step one. Begin from a place of assuming nothing special or extra is needed. If you observe problems or needs, clearly identify them. But when you're working with somebody for the first time, if they're not using anything, let's start with the assumption that they don't need anything. That way, if we find a problem or an issue that requires something, it's going to be really obvious what we are solving by recommending a device or a tool. So then we go to, you know, if there's just to reemphasize, if there's no problems, no devices or tools are needed. And the place where this shows up a lot is when people initiate breastfeeding in the hospital and they have heard or been told that they need to start pumping also. Now, we really need to know where that information is coming from and what problem is it solving. Because if it's solving the problem of they actually have to go back to work next week, well, we might be looking at a situation where they actually do need to pump right now. Or if we've identified that there's a problem with breastfeeding, or they need to be able to supplement what the baby is taking at the breast with some additional express milk, well, yes, then they might need to be pumping. But if they have simply been told that breastfeeding doesn't work unless you also pump, and they're not going to be separated from their baby until they go back to work at, say, 4 months, they probably don't need to be pumping right now. So we really need to help people understand what problem the tool or device or intervention is designed to solve so that they can see if they have that problem or not, and we can help guide them to that place. If they've been given the impression that they needed to have a lot of things in order to breastfeed, they may be really surprised to hear this. And this comes up too when we're talking about things that people put on their nipples. If everybody at your baby shower bought you wonderful, nice smelling creams and ointments, but then your lactation consultant tells you that you actually just need to put a little breast milk on your nipples and they'll be fine, it can be a little surprising. It might be a little disappointing. So we have to help people process this information and understand why we're saying what we're saying so that they understand if you don't have a problem, you don't need to use anything. That's where we begin. So then we move to step two. If there is a problem, problems that identified, discuss the simplest potential techniques or routines which might resolve it. So when we're talking about, you know, very early on in lactation, if we're working with somebody in the hospital or with a very young baby who is maybe having a little trouble with wakefulness, not waking frequently enough to eat, well, the very first intervention for that is going to be skin to skin, getting the baby in the habitat and in the place where they can go through the feeding behaviors and begin to latch. So we want to start with the simplest interventions, not, well, maybe you don't have enough milk, right? And these are things that we teach all the time. We don't always think about it that way, but that's what we're actually doing. When there's a problem, we're starting with the simplest potential intervention that might, which is most likely to resolve it. And we have to believe in the fact that, or, you know, in the concept that breastfeeding works. If you don't believe that, this isn't going to work. And this isn't going to be the right career for you, really. Breastfeeding actually works. Most people can. Most people can make enough milk. We can have outliers, we can have differences, we can have other, you know, issues that we need to help people resolve. But in the main, it's just like when we say the generality that around the world on this planet, most infants sleep near or next to their parents at night, right? Most people sleep, or most babies sleep with their parents. That is not necessarily true in places that are westernized, but it is true for most babies around the world because there's a lot of people on this planet. But it really, we have to think about the relativity. Even if we ourselves work with people, you know, large population of people who a lot of people are coming to us because they feel like they're not making enough milk, or they're not making enough milk, or they have babies who don't latch well, but most babies latch well. Most babies can breastfeed. Most people make enough milk when they have the right information and the right support. So we have to make sure that we ourselves are staying as grounded in that as we possibly can. Even though we may know in our hearts that nearly every person we work with needs interventions, needs tools, needs galactagogues, needs whatever it is that we specialize in, we still have to start for every single person from the beginning. And we have to remember to teach them the simplest interventions and techniques. So whether that's the power of skin to skin, the importance of excellent latch technique, the keys to stable, sustainable infant positioning at the breast, the necessity for frequent milk removal throughout the day and night. We rely on these things because they are time-tested, evidence-based, physiologically plausible, and available to everyone. Everyone can do these things when they have the right information. They don't need to buy things to do those things. Sometimes teaching people that there are things they can do right now before they can even go to the store and get the product means they can be proactive and they can feel like they're taking some control back of their situation. So that's what we're giving people when we're giving them back these types of, sometimes we think of them as simple or basic interventions, but they really are the fundamentals because they work for most people and they make sure that we have the whole foundation of what's supposed to be happening before we start adding in the things that might help, and usually only help if you're already doing those fundamentals anyway. So step three, if a product might be needed or if the client brings one into the conversation, then we discuss the potential positive and negative outcomes, be clear and intentional about any perceived or actual conflicts of interest about that product, and then teach them how to use it if that's what they decide they want to do. They need to know how, they need to know how often, they need to know what to look out for, they need to know what to do if they think they want to stop using it, or, you know, is it something they could use long term, and help them, you know, just make sure you leave them understanding that whether they use it or not, you're still there for them. If it doesn't work for them, you can help them find a different option. Whatever it takes, you're not married to the idea that they have to use this product or can't use the product. You are there to support whatever they want to do. You're there with the information and it's objective and it doesn't have anything to do with you having a relationship with that product or any kind of bias. We adjust our lens in what we do to focus on simplicity. So we want to just keep in mind that whether our client lives in a resource-rich or resource-poor environment, their very human baby has the same needs. So whether they can afford all the gadgets and tools, or they don't have access to any of those things, their very, very human baby needs the exact same things. Products and tools are meant to be complementary. In some cases, they're very, very helpful. But we have to keep in mind that using products and tools can have very different mental health effects on different people. We can never assume that recommending or, you know, encouraging someone to use a product is going to be a benign thing for their experience with lactation. We're here to enlighten people, to provide evidence-based information, which in some cases may conflict with what they've already heard, read, or been told. Or, you know, there could be something that they have misunderstood along the way. we may not be explaining things in the best way, so we have to work to ensure that they're understanding of what we're saying. And sometimes we're telling people what they need to hear, but they don't really want to hear it. Especially, you know, the easiest example of that is when we talk about normal nighttime waking and why that's important for babies. We know people don't want to hear that when they're tired and frustrated and it's challenging. But helping to explain why it's happening and helping to normalize that behavior for a baby and helps, it just helps them to understand that there's nothing wrong with what they're doing and there's nothing wrong with their baby. It's just something that we're going to have to work on strategies to live with. So let's keep in mind that, you know, how we manage lactation is, it's our responsibility to help people understand how lactation is managed in the very, very simplest terms. But we also have to be really careful about how we use numbers. Numbers do different things in people's brains. So if we say to somebody that they will need to be expressing milk every 3 or 4 hours, for a lot of people, what happens is this sort of automatic multiplication or division in their head. They heard 3 or 4 hours, so they took 24 hours in a day, and they divided it by every 4 hours. So now they're doing 6 milk expressions in 24 hours. And that's not what we know is best for milk production. So think about that. That's a controllable thing. That's a controllable factor. When we give information that's confusing or people receive conflicting information from different sources, that's where they start to have problems with the management of lactation. So we want to be super clear on the basics, those really, really super basic things that they need to know. Evidence-based information every time, the simplest way that we can, because education repairs those kinds of problems, repairs that misunderstanding. We want them to understand about prolactin. We want them to know that prolactin is the milk-making hormone that turns on the cells that make milk. They can release more prolactin by taking milk out from the breast more frequently. We want to work with them to understand their routines to ensure that however they're doing lactation, that prolactin is being released at least every 3 hours during the day and night. And yes, there are some people who can go a little bit longer during the night, but if they're struggling with milk production, they shouldn't be. They should be doing it more frequently. So that's the thing we have to remember. Sure, there's outliers in both directions, but some people have a prolactin level that's so on the borderline that if they start stretching things out at night, that's when they start to run into milk production issues. So we've got to always be returning to that. And we want to teach that to parents. Sometimes we skip this part. Sometimes we spend more time talking about other things, but teaching them about prolactin, that it turns on the cells that make milk, that's a kind of a simple way to explain what happens. We need their body to release more prolactin. And the only way to do that is to take milk out more frequently. Because what happens at night impacts milk production all the time. And that is one of those things that people don't really necessarily want to hear, but need to hear. So we've got to talk about their infant nighttime routines before they're worried about galactagogues or any other kinds of devices and tools, because the manipulation of infant sleep results in fewer milk removal sessions per 24 hours, whether that means less breastfeeding, less milk intake during the night, less milk expression through hand expression or a breast pump. Making or encouraging babies to sleep longer through any method results in fewer milk removal sessions per 24 hours. That will impact milk production. So oftentimes I find that that is the first thing we are addressing when there's a milk production concern that is, you know, obvious or one that is suspected. That is the first place to intervene. We also want people to understand that if they keep doing the same thing that they're doing and everything's fine, then everything's going to stay fine and everything's going to keep working. The easiest example of this is your milk's not going to just dry up one day. People think that that happened to them before, but when we explore that story with them, often what happened is that something changed and they didn't realize it, or they did something different and they didn't realize those two things were connected. Whether that, not saying that's, you know, their fault, it's just two things that they didn't connect with each other at the time. So logically, what they came out with was, my milk dried up one day. We know that that's not how it works. And we want them to understand that if everything's going fine, they don't need to change anything because they're not trying to fix anything. But if everything is not going fine, that's when we start to change things. That's when we change, especially routines. So whether that means bringing the baby to the breast more frequently, keeping the baby on the breast until they actually indicate that they're done, pumping more frequently, using a tool in a different way that's going to make it more efficient, whatever that thing is, in order to make a change, they have to change something in their routine or their use of products and techniques. The number of milk removals per 24 hours, under 6 months, minimum of 8 per 24 hours. Thorough milk removal. Electric pump sessions, if they're pump dependent, most people find that around 20 minutes is what they need to really maximize. More than that tends to run into problems, and less than that tends to run into problems. So it's not an exact science. We don't really have the exact science on that, but most people do find that. And if, you know, we explore current milk expression routines with people, if everything's going fine, don't need to change their routine unless it's, you know, to the point where we can see if they keep doing that, it's potentially going to cause a compromise in their milk production. But if everything is fine, they don't need to change anything. It's when they're starting to have problems that we need to take them right back into this cycle of the minimum of 8 per 24 and making sure that they're thoroughly removing milk every time. We can also encourage people to be adding sensory inputs to both milk expression sessions and breastfeeding. What it does is it changes that rhythm, like rhythm and music can help babies suck rhythmically, can help milk expression happen in a more rhythmic way. These are evidence-based tools to improve it. Other things like touch and scent, when we think about telling the mother of a preterm baby to take home a blanket that's been wrapped around her baby in the NICU, that's an example of adding sensory inputs to improve milk expression outputs. So when people are exclusively breastfeeding, some of the interventions and techniques that we might recommend before tools or devices are going to be skin to skin, using compressions during breastfeeding if the baby needs to take more milk or we have any concerns about milk production. We want to ensure that feeding is happening in a baby-led responsive fashion, and we want to help them eliminate nighttime disruptions to milk removals. And those are going to be things that manipulate infant sleep and cause the baby to wake less frequently or to feed less during the night, because what happens at night impacts milk production all day and impacts baby's milk intake all day and overall. So if someone is exclusively expressing milk, some of the interventions we would recommend before tools or devices that they're not already using is going to be skin to skin with their baby, using compressions during or after pumping, or hand expressing after pumping, eliminating nighttime disruptions to milk removals. Again, can be very tempting if you don't have to wake up to feed your baby. It can be very tempting to also not wake up to pump or express milk. They can also warm their flanges before pumping or cover them up with a blanket or socks on the bottles so they don't see how much milk is in there. And they can use power or cluster pumping techniques to improve milk production before trying anything that requires products or tools. If they're doing a combination of breastfeeding and expressing milk, we do all of those things. Skin to skin, compressions during breastfeeding, compressions or hand expression during or after pumping, eliminate nighttime disruptions to milk removals, warm the flanges or cover them while pumping. You can use power or cluster pumping techniques, and they can also try parallel pumping where they use an electric breast pump on one breast while the baby feeds on the other one. That is also an evidence-based technique that can not only save time, but sometimes improves milk production. So, and it, These are all techniques that can be recommended before we have to worry about using tools or devices or products. These are all things we could, theoretically, you could tell somebody on the phone and they would be able to do that without going anywhere, buying anything, ordering anything. So these are things that are proactive. They work. They are representative of the fundamentals of how human lactation works. They don't require an outlay of resources. They simplify the process for people. Even though you're thinking, well, I'm telling them another thing to do, you're simplifying it, reminding them that they have control over the process. They have control, they're being proactive, and they can manipulate the situation themselves without having to rely on something that they purchased. Because our goal is ethical, effective lactation care. We want to ensure that when we need to support people to use products, it's because we can point exactly to the reason why they're doing it, what we expect the outcomes to be, and we know that they have been informed about what they're using, how it may impact their situation, and how to use it properly. It's very frustrating to find that somebody has taken the time to research a product, to purchase it, and to start using it. But now that they're seeing you for lactation support, it turns out they weren't using it properly or they didn't have the right size of something. That's so frustrating for us, you know, on their behalf. We want people to have effective and enjoyable breastfeeding and lactation experiences that help get them closer to their own goals that they feel in control of. So when we work with them in this way, with our mindset of scarcity, are ensuring people have access to us for the expertise and evaluation that they need, and that when we see them, we provide them with all of this information they need to use products sparingly, but also properly when they do, and always know that they have control over when and how they use things. That's when we can feel really confident that we're helping people to use products to the best of their abilities and for the betterment of their lactation journeys. Thanks for joining me. Talk to you soon.